This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
There are 40 heads of state present, and there are reportedly at least 20 countries who have applied or who are interested in joining that BRICS grouping. And again, for the current members, that expansion represents different opportunities depending on who you are.
That was Christopher Van Dorn, Senior Research Fellow with the Chatham House Africa Program on possible BRICS expansion. Details coming up. Also, it's election day in Zimbabwe. We'll hear from voters there. And new, the situation in the Eastern Democratic Republic is getting worse. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Voters in Zimbabwe are heading to the polls for parliamentary and presidential elections. Many fear the ballot will be rigged, keeping the country stuck in its cycle of economic struggles. The opposition has rallied under the umbrella of the Citizens Coalition of for Change, CCC, and standard bearer Nelson Chamisa, a 45-year-old lawyer and pastor. President Emmerson Mnangagwa, 80, from the ruling ZANU-PF party, is running to be re-elected. I had a conversation not long ago with our reporter Kuzai Zanawashi, who describes the mood and atmosphere today, election day in Harare.
So the mood has been a bit subdued. There's been a false start of the election in most parts of the urban constituencies. People woke up early when polling stations opened. Some of them, they couldn't vote on a number of reasons. Part of this was some polling stations didn't have ballot papers. Some, they didn't have the ink that they use to mark your fingers that you have voted. That has been the mood. And also in urban centers, people woke up to posters that had been thrown around of the main opposition that were discouraging people. So they were practically saying the election has been stolen, so there's no need to turn up to vote. And the leader of the opposition, the main opposition, Citizens Coalition for Change, Nelson Chamisa, accused the ruling ZANU-PF for being behind that tactic of discouraging voters. But that trick may have triggered people and encouraged them to turn out to vote, because people have waited for hours and hours. In some parts, voting only started in the afternoon, whereas they have been waiting for hours since morning while waiting for the delivery to come through of ballot papers and the inks that are used for voting.
Kudzai, how about international observers? Are they visible? Have you seen any at the polling stations?
Well, I know at there's been a few in urban centers, but my worry is they arrived slightly late into the country to get a full scope of what's happening. And also they've been, I think their presence has been seen more in the urban centers. I know former Mozambican President Joaquim Chissano was at David Livingstone in the morning when they opened. And that is one of the polling stations that was well equipped. So at low, ideally, the ballot papers and every supply, it should be delivered the day before the election. So we're yet to see. So critics worry that there might be a lot of court cases coming up. Litigation against the Electoral Commission to say they didn't conduct this election in a way that is prescribed in the Constitution. So we are yet to see what comes after this. I think one thing also to note that we didn't mention is that in some constituencies, there have been stations of ZANU-PF, suspected ZANU-PF members, but they would have ZANU-PF branding. They will be marking against the voters for who voted, who turned up to vote. So they are calling it more of a poll survey, but it's within 300 meters from the polling station, which is against the law, and because the law prohibits any form of campaigning during the voting period. So there's been that taking place, and across the country, there's been reports of that. And
isn't that seen as resorting to thuggery?
Well, yeah, it borders along voter intimidation, because in some parts of the rural areas, the trend in the past has been that they are told that we know how you vote, so your vote is not your secret. So they would vote, and they are threatened that you have to vote wisely, because we will know where you voted, and we'll come after you if you didn't vote for us. So you find that that becomes the form of intimidation that they encounter.
So what happens today? What time does the polls close today?
We are yet to see what time they close, but they should make an allocation for the hours that have been lost from the false start. So ideally, any polling station that started serving at 7 a.m. should close at 7 p.m. And not technically at 7 p.m., but they will serve everyone who would be in the queue from 7 p.m., but they'll close the gate.
That was Kudzai Zinawashi, Election Day in Zimbabwe, reporting from Harare. In Harare, many Zimbabweans expressed mixed feelings on the importance of voting in today's national elections. Rutendo Mawera in Harare has more.
Registered voter Sibonoku Lebulungu says there's a lot of weariness among voters.
This 2023 election is a unique one, sadly, because we have lost most of our citizens who have migrated to the diaspora. So people are really not sure how tomorrow will pan out. There's a lot of fatigue. People are tired. The enthusiasm that is usually there when there's elections is no longer there. There's violence that happened within political parties in the 2018 elections could also be a contributing factor to why most people are not keen really to go and participate in this year's elections.
Eva Nice Munando leads a non-governmental organization, Female Students Network for University Students. She says the lack of change after previous elections contributes to voter apathy.
In my view, at the moment, I don't think people, they care about elections. They feel they are tired. They feel elections are not going to bring anything that they desire with their hearts. People are not interested, but to some extent, I've seen a lot of youths have registered to vote. We are optimistic that maybe the participation will also be increased in 2023 harmonized elections.
Yilda Mahumucha, a lawyer from Harare, thinks people care about elections.
People are so keen to vote. Women are so keen to participate. There have been other economic challenges which people do not know how to solve, and they feel by voting, maybe changing their local member of parliament, maybe through changing their councillor who is directly involved in their developmental work at community level. They feel if they change, they can achieve something, or there could be a change in the positive.
A young voter, Nobet Kuvamudiki, who lives in Harare, concurs.
I think young people, they do care about the elections because it represents their hope. They find hope in voting, and they find hope in having a leadership that represents their needs and their demands. But considering what has happened in our previous elections, some young people are now fed up with the elections because some of their intended results did not come up, and they feel aggrieved because of that. We just hope that during these harmonized elections, they'll be able to turn up.
Voting began this morning for Zimbabwe's presidential, parliamentary and municipal council elections. For VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere Narare.
For updates on the Zimbabwe election, you can check out voaafrica.com, and we'll have more on all your favorite VOA news programs. South Africa's foreign minister today said the leaders of the BRICS bloc of leading developing nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, have agreed on mechanisms for considering new members. Agreement on expansion paves the way for dozens of interested nations to make their case for joining the grouping, which has pledged to become a champion of the developing global south. Enlarging BRICS has topped the agenda at the bloc's summit taking place in Johannesburg, South Africa's commercial capital. Reuters News reports that Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor confirmed the agreement on the Ubuntu Radio, a station run by the ministry. She said they would make a more detailed announcement when the summit ends tomorrow. The BRICS summit began yesterday. Also today, China's President Xi Jinping called for unity among BRICS members as he pushed the case for expanding the grouping. China and Russia, which have deteriorating relations with Western nations, strongly back an expansion, while the other members are more hesitant. Christopher Van Doom is a senior research fellow with the Chatham House Africa Program. His research focuses on the political economy and international relations of Southern Africa. He is currently in Johannesburg monitoring the BRICS summit. I first asked him to talk to us about the overall message that is being pushed at the summit.
The overall messaging that's been pushed ahead of the summit is that this is a group of countries who represent a significant portion of the global population, that represent an increasingly important part of the global economy, and as such is a group of countries who do need to be better coordinated and should be working with others for economic cooperation. And there is an ambition to set themselves up as a alternative voice of governance of the global economic architecture against the G7, which they see as being dominated by countries who are in relative economic decline and who represent only a very, very small part of the global population. So there is an element of this that is this kind of, that's about representation and allowing a voice for the global south. And that's the message that's being pushed in advance. There are, of course, complications within that. Even within those countries, there are geopolitical tensions, for example, between China and India. For example, Russia's positioning in the world at the moment, other countries, even within that grouping, are more circumspect around Russia's desire for BRICS to have a BRICS currency, for example. For them, that's an important way of mitigating the effect of American and UN sanctions. But for other countries, there's less interest in pursuing such a path, although there is a desire to move away from a dollar-dependent economy and for more trade to be done in other currencies and other local currencies. So you can see that the conversation is trying to, or the South Africans in particular, trying to keep the conversation around this idea around economic cooperation away from some of the political tensions. Now,
and Chris, that's exactly what I was going to ask, like the BRICS expansion becoming the top trending issue at the moment.
What's really important about this one, there's a very live conversation around the expansion of membership of BRICS. There are 40 heads of state present, and there are reportedly at least 20 countries who have applied or who are interested in joining that BRICS grouping. And again, for the current members, that expansion represents different opportunities depending on who you are. For China, it's about a growing number of countries that sit within a China-dominated cluster to demonstrate that they are perhaps the leading legitimate voice of developing countries and of the global south. For Russia, that expansion is about acknowledging that they have diplomatic friendships and relationships around the world, and about demonstrating that they're not as isolated as the West is, as they would put it, trying to demonstrate that they are. For others like Brazil and South Africa, it's a bit more complicated. It's about having an expanded membership that allows for a greater group diplomacy of those kind of middle tier powers. Particularly for South Africa, it's a very interesting question mark for them of what best serves their interests. Is it better for them to be the smallest member of this big club, and therefore they have an elevated status on the world stage as a result of that? Or do they see that club as being dominated by some of the bigger players, and actually their interests would be best served by expanding that and allowing them to engage in group diplomacy with other middle-tier powers? So yes, this conversation around expansion is one of the focuses of this session this week. And you know, you can feel that sense of, okay, something significant is happening here in Johannesburg. You can, you know, the extra security fighter jets flying overhead. There is that sense of, okay, something significant is taking place, and the South Africans have been very keen to promote that. But in terms of the expansion of that membership or what really comes out of this, we don't really know. It's likely going to be something along the lines of a framework for how BRICS could expand, possibly some criteria. I think that it's unlikely that we'll see the signing up of new members in the immediate future. But certainly that's what this is about, is demonstrating that this is a bloc that has, over the course of the last 15 years, grown into something, and they're looking to expand.
Christopher Van Dom is a senior research fellow with the Chatham House Africa program. He spoke with me earlier today from Johannesburg. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The Norwegian Refugee Council, NRC, says the Democratic Republic of Congo is by far the largest hunger emergency in the world. NRC Secretary General Jan Egeland, who is in Goma, says the lack of attention to the unprecedented suffering, especially in eastern DRC, is unforgivable. He tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that recent military campaigns and massacres have caused an acute emergency after decades of deep crisis and neglect, and that funding has dried up because the world's attention is mostly focused on the people of Ukraine after the Russian invasion there.
It's nearly 26 million people in one gigantic hunger catastrophe. There is no supplies of food to millions. It's a desperately underfunded situation. The wars and the violence is increasing, and people cannot produce food, and there is too little supplies into the place.
You're saying they can't produce foods because they're fleeing their homes because of the violence, right?
Yes. So millions, 6.6 million people have now been internally displaced in eastern Congo, which is in principle very fertile land. It should be possible for people to feed themselves on their own land. But when these 150 armed groups roam around and attack people in their villages and in their farms, they have to leave. But it is also coupled with a collapse in humanitarian funding. We were supposed to increase dramatically this year. I remember there was 15 million people in need of humanitarian assistance when I was here the last time. Now it's between 25 and 30 million people in need. So the double of needs, but less funding. The United States has gone down in funding. Many other generous donors are providing less now than only 1 or 2 or 3 years ago.
We have Paul Ndiho, who was just there in May in Goma, other places in the DRC. He said what struck him really tremendously was the number of children who just seem to be roaming around in these huge settlement camps where there's like hundreds of thousands of people. What's going on with those kids?
I mean, it's really the children and women that are the biggest losers in this senseless series of wars and conflicts. So the men, the fathers, are gone. They are dead. They have fled. They are fighting. The mothers, in many cases, they are not. Also because they are dead or they have been split away from the majority of their children. I was in camps in Ituri, which is in the northern part of eastern Congo, perhaps the worst or one of the worst conflict areas. I was in a camp with thousands of displaced people, including now returnees from Uganda, where there was also zero aid for refugees. So people are coming back. They fled to Uganda 3-4 years ago. Now they have zero assistance there, and they walk back to the conflict that they left.
That's Jan Egeland speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Goma in the DRC. The Malawi government says it will forcibly open 125 containers confiscated from refugees and asylum seekers on suspicion they contain, among other things, firearms and counterfeiting machines. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi police said in a statement that the exercise expected to start on August 28 is in line with a court order on appropriate procedures to open the confiscated containers. Peter Kalaya is a spokesperson for the Malawi Police Service.
Basically, the court ordered that during the date of opening, all the bona fide owners of the containers should be present. Again, the whole process is going to be supervised by the court itself. So there will be a judge or a magistrate in charge. Again, the court identified a number of stakeholders to be present as witnesses.
Kalaya said the witnesses would include officials from the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, the National Intelligence Service, the Minister of Homeland Security, and the Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Security. Police in Malawi confiscated the containers during an exercise to forcibly relocate refugees staying outside the country's Dzaleka refugee camp. The Malawi government said the forcible relocation, which started in May, was in line with its encampment policy, which prohibits refugees from staying outside the refugee camp. The government also said by staying outside the designated camp, the refugees were posing a threat to national security. However, local and international rights campaigners have long been asking the government to stop the relocation exercise, saying it was being carried out in a dehumanizing manner. Human Rights Watch said in a statement in June that forcible relocation violates international conventions for refugees, which Malawi ratified. The rights organization also said it had learned that some refugees were allegedly assaulted during raids and that their money was taken. However, Galaya said police confiscated the containers for safekeeping.
When we started our operation, most of the containers were abandoned by the owners. And looking at the situation the way it was, we just added padlocks to the containers and moved them to National Police Headquarters for safety, while others that were too heavy to be moved were left at the scene, but we left our officers to be guarding them.
Galaya also said the containers were confiscated on suspicion that they contained instruments for committing various crimes, including firearms and machines for making fake currencies and minerals. In a statement, the police asked the owners of the confiscated containers to bring relevant identification, which include refugee identity cards, permits to own firearms, permits to keep foreign currency, and business registration permits. The statement also said those who fail to attend the exercise or bring the required documents will have their property disposed of in line with Malawi's legislation. Burundian refugee Ngendakumana Zakayo is the community leader at the Dzaleka refugee camp. He told VOA there's a likelihood that some of the confiscated containers have already been tampered with and then locked by police themselves. He says they have information that some of the containers suspected of containing a lot of money were opened, and all the money that was there was taken, and the new locks were fitted. We also fear that those who were doing this also have a chance to put some things inside the containers to tarnish the image of the owners. Charles Kajoloweka represents 12 civil society organizations that last week wrote the Malawi police to stop the forcible relocation of refugees. He told VOA it would be difficult to believe that the forcible opening of containers confiscated from refugees will be done in a good faith.
Basically, what we are seeing is that there is potential bias to portray asylum seekers and refugees as threats to national security and economy. Just from that perspective already, you can see that this exercise to open the containers is aimed at justifying the narratives the government has been parading so far.
But police spokesperson Kalaya dismisses those speculations, saying the exercise to forcibly open the confiscated containers was sanctioned by the court and not the police. Police said the aim is to show transparency and accountability on how the relocation exercise is being conducted. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.